Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started. Please welcome my guests this evening, Tom Conwell and Anna Manalo.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
There are many of us in this world who will never, ever experience anything otherworldly. However, for those who do and continue to on a daily basis, one may never really come to appreciate their peaceful life. When you put together a forensic pattern researcher, Tom Conwell, along with an award-winning screenwriter, Anna Manalo, what do you get? You get an exceptionally written book, true and factual, called The Night Visitants. Tom Conwell is a ufologist. He has a wide range of experience and expertise, as well as a keen awareness of physics, computer, and internet software, with a broad knowledge of electronics and how they interact with the paranormal world and UFOs. Tom studies databases as a forensic pattern researcher, and over the past 6 years, he has written 3 volumes of a book entitled They Are Here, a self-published collection of blogs called Going Interstellar, and also a book called Earthquakes and UFOs, his most recent. He has studied and researched UFO sighting reports from the U.S. East Coast, the Central U.S., and the Western U.S. for many years. He has given presentations and speeches about each of these subjects. Tom has assembled a map of UFO sightings, which has revealed many anomalies and is now an integral part of his research studies. Anna Manalo is an award-winning screenwriter. She was born and raised in a suburb in Manila, where her neighborhood was replete with encounters with beings from other dimensions. As a small child, she came to know and experience hauntings and uncanny events that her neighbors and family members had also encountered. She is a screenwriter with numerous accolades earned from competitions in the U.S. She is also an artist and travel photographer. Anna has traveled to over 26 countries, encountering tourists and locals who had had the most riveting accounts one could ever imagine. Together, Tom and Anna have completed a book called The Night Visitants, which is a mystery of abduction phenomena, which Tom, a ufologist and pattern researcher, goes on a quest to prove a hypothesis: are extraterrestrials really here? Anna has helped Tom put together a captivating story, one in which is not only nonfiction, but also one that is suspenseful and one that is currently being lived out in many people's lives as we speak. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and grab something, because this story is not going to have its end, not real soon. Please welcome to my show this evening, Tom Conwell and Anna Manalo.
Well, hello, Anna and Tom, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Well, it's good to have you here. And Anna, it's always good to see you. We had Anna on the show quite a while ago, but this time she's being joined by Tom, and they have a new book out, and it's going to be a very interesting discussion tonight. So as they say, let's get at it. So I think before we get into your book and everything, I think people like to hear a little bit about the foundation of each of you, because some people may be familiar with Anna at this point, but Tom, they're not familiar with you just yet. So I think I'm going to throw the first question at you and ask you a little bit about when did you become interested in, or did you have an experience in, either the paranormal or anything to do with UFO activity?
Okay. I never really saw anything, had any encounters. Absolutely nothing happened to me when I was a youngster. But I was always interested in the cosmos and what's going on out there. My aunt was the Astronomical Association of America's secretary. And she used to take me to conferences. So I got a chance to rub shoulders and elbows with some pretty important people that, of course, as a teenager, I had no knowledge of, you know. I mean, they're just guys or girls or whatever. I left with a pretty healthy appreciation of astronomy and science. And I knew it was really important in my life. Well, my life took a turn towards that, and I ended up in electronics and worked for the Navy and then Honeywell for approximately 36 years. And then I retired. Mm-hmm. And I was looking for something to do. And I joined a paranormal team because I had watched TV shows about the paranormal, thought it was fascinating, and thought, gee, I wonder if I'll ever see a ghost. Mm-hmm. Well, I did see a ghost at about my fourth investigation, and that's when the doors opened. Stuff was happening all over the place to me. And at the same time, the owner of the paranormal group wanted me to look into UFOs with him. Fine. I was happy to do that because I always had a basic interest in it. And that's when things started happening to me in the UFO realm. And nothing happened. Believe me, nothing. I never had a feeling that I was visited. Absolutely nothing happened to me prior to me starting to look for it.
Interesting.
It was really interesting.
Well, I have a question for you a little bit more, and then Anna will get to you in just a second here. So, you know, when you had your paranormal experience and you actually saw a ghost, let's start with that. And the reason why I'm looking at this a little bit differently is because I know that even for myself, I started out, well, spiritual, then it went to paranormal, and then it all of a sudden it started evolving to extraterrestrial visitations of some sort. And so I've been trying to connect the dots myself. But let's go back a minute here, Tom. And people are always curious about what exactly did you see? So you saw something of a ghostly nature. What exactly did you see?
Okay, there were two events. Mm-hmm. The first event, I had arrived early at a site. We were investigating a house not too far from here. And I pulled up in front of the place, and my son was with me, and we walked up to the place, and I was chatting with a lady, and she said something to her daughter about going in the house and going upstairs and bringing something down with her. And I said, well, why don't you get the guy who just walked past us to do that? And she said, there's nobody in the house, Tom. Hmm. So I, you know, I'm like, wow, that was interesting. And this guy was 100% human looking. He was just there. It was no mistaking. Mm-hmm. He was dressed in a older blue jeans and a bib top, and had a wooden toolbox. Mm-hmm. Looks like somebody made for him, or he made. Mm-hmm. And then later in that investigation, I went looking through his path where he walked within the house. And then remainder of the night, I had electromagnetic field readings from the entirety of his path.
Interesting.
Yeah, I just thought that was really strange.
If you felt okay, so my question, of course, goes right back to that path a moment here. I have actually walked through what I call an electrical cobweb. It feels like a cobweb, like if you've ever walked through one before, but it, except it's electrified. So yes. Now you're on that path and you're kind of going the same route that he was going. Did you feel any type of unusual electrical stimulation at all while you're on that path, or did your meter just basically pick up on that?
It was just a meter. I felt nothing.
Yeah.
Of course, it was my first feeling, and I didn't know what I should have been feeling.
Yeah.
So that's about all I can say about that.
Yeah, interesting. Did the woman ever acknowledge the fact that she was aware that there was somebody in that gentleman in that house? Did she say, yeah, I'm familiar with him, or did she seem a little bit taken back by you referring to that?
She was taken back, but she said to me, oh my, that's why you're here.
So, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, cool. All right. So then one more question, then we're going to get to you, Anna. My question next would be, okay, so now, how much investigating did you do at that point? You joined a group and you were interested in this, and then you're doing, you know, some of your own kind of, I call it citizen researching, kind of studying kind of this field. Did you do that for a long period of time? And then what period went by until you all of a sudden may have, and even though you might not have had a UFO experience readily at that point, did things shift to that aspect?
I probably had about 6 investigations. Mm-hmm. And one of them, I saw something that was really incredible. And then about 3 months after that is when I focused entirely on UFOs.
Okay, that's interesting. All right. We're going to hold your thought right there. Mm-hmm. Anna, welcome back to the show. Anna is a very good writer and screenwriter. And so, Anna, let's revisit this a little bit. Tell people a little bit about who you are and what you've done, and then how you made your own connections in these fields.
Mine started way back when I was actually just about 2 years old, and it started far off in a very small hamlet outside Manila in the Philippines, where my father was actually the experiencer. He was, at the time, we were living in a 2-floor, what you might call a townhouse with 3 bedrooms on second floor, and he started feeling and sighting some creature that looks very much like Mothman.
Oh.
This went on for about several months. It got to the point where it was infiltrating his dreams, and we'll get to dreams later with Tom's situation. They were actually nightmares, and it threatened to take his soul. It was a very tragic situation because we had clergy come in. My understanding from my mother was the building was blessed, the apartment was blessed where we were living in. We continued to encounter this creature, which was very malevolent from what I understand, and it finally led to his death. So he passed away at 24. I don't know if I shared that with you, Dr. Schultz, at the time.
No.
Yeah.
Anna, was this your dad?
This was my father as the umbrella starting to fall over here.
Oh, yeah, don't get attacked by the umbrella there, Anna. If you need to, if you need to do something, it's okay, dude. Yeah, I'm all of a sudden watching Anna getting attacked.
But anyway, so that took me on a path that was very different from most people. I wasn't at the time aware I was a sensitive. I started seeing creatures around that same house. But shortly after he passed away, we moved to my grandmother's house, and whatever it was followed us. My grandmother's house accidentally was built in a development where there were Japanese soldiers' bodies buried under the soil, and no one ever knew because it was a site of a massacre, from what I understand. So that itself was replete with all kinds of hauntings.
Right.
That took me into a very deep interest on the subject. And actually, incidentally, I started as an investigator for MUFON back in 2008. From there, I had cases of abduction. And Tom, you're probably aware of this. I had several cases that were not recorded on the MUFON website. I was told that there was nothing that we could do about them. So what I did was I chronicled every single one, and I wrote it in a book, which was published in 2017. I also included in that anthology all the other incidents that happened to me personally. So it was sort of like semi-biographical, and I think the Mothman's trying to get me on the head here.
It's okay, and if you fly away, we'll come and get you.
Yeah, so that takes me to the present time, where I actually began writing as a scriptwriter. Went to Hollywood a number of times pitching screenplays. I had a total of about 11. Four of them got awards of every kind of type. But you have to know people, as you well know. You have to know people there in the industry who are pretty high up. So I kept working, and then finally I retired about 2 years ago, and boom, there's my four other books. The fifth one is with co-author Tom over here, and it's been a pleasure really working with him and working with the experiencer that he introduced to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then the question, of course, comes into play as to how did you two come together? There must have been some point where one of you reached out to the other, or you chatted and you found a connection. How did you both come together?
It's interesting because when you're on social media, in this case, it was Facebook. I don't even remember how it came about, but I know that a number of people friended me from the UFO field. Tom happened to be one of them. And then we were, and this was during the pandemic. So this is 2020. I was not even retired at that point. We were talking about like the level of isolation we were feeling, the anxiety that came along with that. And we actually started interacting by phone, doing breathing exercises. Remember that, Tom? I don't know if you recall that, but that was interesting.
I recall. Yeah.
So we then started talking, and then we started texting each other, sharing information about books that I was meaning to write, books that he had. And then it was pretty much in November of last year when he started sharing with me the kinds of dreams that he was getting.
Okay.
And so I was really intrigued by it. And then he shared with me that there was a file that he had. He had gotten some responses from a questionnaire. One of them really intrigued him. And this is a woman who will go unnamed because she does not want her location or her real name disclosed. I reached out to her. Actually, she already reached out to me. I didn't even know it was her. And that's how the book kind of like eventually formed. I said, Tom, I think I have a lot of material here from you and from her. And I would like to create, you know, what I would call a memoir, because it's in their voice. But it's really a biography. As you read it, it's them speaking to us about their experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. And so now you two have come together. And then, Tom, you've been having dreams. And so tell us the title of your book, the both of you, the title of your book, and then kind of give us just kind of a little bit of a baby synopsis here about what it's about. And then talk to us a little bit about these dreams that you had.
Okay.
Good.
Here's the book, okay. The Night Visitants, mm-hmm. The Ufologist and Experiencer, and the Undefinable. Yeah. I couldn't read that backwards. And this is our book. Mm-hmm. It's a fairly nice book, quite thick and loaded with all kinds of events.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as the dreams went, things were happening to me at night, and I never really applied them to me having a dream, because I've never had dreams like this. So for the longest time, I thought I was just cracking up. I didn't know what else to think. Once I put down a long list of the various kind of dreams that I had, mm-hmm. I realized it was all pointing me in a direction. And that direction was, pay attention, pal. There's something out here for you. And once I realized that, I think my whole attitude changed completely from I'm cracking up to there's something here and I have to start investigating it.
Now, let me ask you a quick question about mm-hmm. those dreams, though, because... Yeah. Of course, everybody has dreams. I can't speak for everybody, but it seems like everybody has a dream of some sort. And sometimes when we wake up, we don't always remember our dreams. At first we do. We're like, oh, yeah, boy, did I have a weird dream. And then, yeah, what was it about? And then you can't remember it anymore, right?
Yeah.
But what kind of dreams were you having? Because were they anything of the UFO nature, or were they just a series of different types of aspects that all of a sudden you were putting two and two together? So give us a little bit of a bird's eye view as to maybe like one of the ones that made you go, huh, I wonder about this.
It was one of my first dreams.
Okay.
I woke up walking down a path. It was the fall, and I could feel the leaves under my feet. Now, I didn't have shoes on, and... that's unusual because I would never even go outside without shoes on. Mm-hmm. So here I am walking down this path and I feel the wet leaves on my feet, and I come around the corner and there is a ship, egg-shaped ship sitting there alongside the path.
Mm-hmm.
And next to that, there was a guy who was made out of light. In other words, I couldn't look at him. He was just so bright that I couldn't identify him. He had no identification marks because I couldn't look directly at him.
Yeah.
And then he asked me if he could borrow my energy because his mate on the ship is sick. So he brought me onto the ship. And I mean, I told him, I don't know how to do this. He says, don't worry, just stand there. It's really simple. And this wasn't in regards to any kind of teaching mechanism that I could tell. He just showed me this. And I stood next to the person. And then he got up. He said, I felt fine. And now you can leave. Well, one of the other aspects about this ship, when I walked onto the ship, this thing was about maybe 6 feet tall.
Hmm.
That's the whole ship. And the guy was probably, although he was sitting down, he was probably 5 feet tall.
Hmm.
So how could he be from the ship? Yeah, it really didn't make sense. So when I walked onto the ship, I realized that I was looking at this something that was as large as an amphitheater inside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that happened, but it was like absolutely huge.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, he told me to that he used my energy and he thanked me profusely. And then I went to leave. And I started walking back down the path. And the next thing I remember, I woke up in bed. And it was so real that the first thing I did was reach down to see if there were leaves still attached to my feet. Mm-hmm. It was that real.
Yeah.
I guess that was number one. And that's the one that I knew was influenced somehow.
Interesting. You know, I've heard of this before, about that amphitheater, you know, people mm-hmm. going into a ship, and then it's this big, wide amphitheater, and then sometimes they see a bunch of pictures or video or motion pictures going around them that may not always make sense, or maybe some people report it as feeling like they're being downloaded with information that they couldn't understand. When you're inside this ship, though, and you had seen this big space, even though from the outside it looked like a little type of unit here, did you feel like you were being downloaded with anything? Did you feel like something odd was happening to you?
No, I was wondering what the hell, well, what I was doing there, number one, and how they were going to use my energy, because I've never seen anything like that. So I felt nothing other than that. But the downloading has happened multiple times at night. Dreams, not so much dreams, but I just feel when I get up in the morning, I feel like I've been sitting in a 12-hour lecture hall.
Interesting. Anna, when you hear stories like this and everything, because you have to organize and you have to kind of think through a process on how to deliver this to your reader and everything like that. So Tom is telling you some things about these dreams. And you're sitting here probably going, how am I going to approach this? How did you receive that information? And then how did you go about finding a way to, I don't want to use the word validate, because you do a lot of, I think, do you do a lot of non-fictional writing or both? Fictional, non-fictional, I can't remember.
I use something called creative non-fiction, and what I do is create art based on the information that Tom has given me. In this particular book, I created two plots. There were two through lines, and it ended up being a contrast. Their experiences were very diametrically opposed. Mm-hmm. Tom was more on the benevolent end of alien contact. The other woman, who we call Shailene, was more on the malevolent end of alien contact. And when you look at it, the book is actually two genres. It is both what they call sci-fi fiction, but also supernatural, because we don't really know the nature of the contact that Shailene has made. This is something that happened to her by the introduction of a haunted object that came from Nazi Germany that her father brought home with her, with him, and it ended up in the ceiling crawl space above her bed. She was only about 6 years old at the time when all these kinds of infestations happened. And when I write the process, by your question, what I do is I do a series of interviews. This one was a particularly interesting one. Went on to talk to Tom, I'd say, over 15 times. And then I started creating the backdrop of his story. At the same time, I was making contact by phone with Shailene, and I think we must have talked over at least 20 times, calls to get clarification and things like that. And with that bulk of information, I started to form. I don't really do outlines. That's different for me. I find outlines restrictive. But what I did was I introduced Tom first as the first person of interest. Went on to allude that there were a lot of strange things happening around him as an investigator. And then I introduced the background of Shailene when she was six. The interesting part about this, which I did not intend, was as I was writing it, I began to really see a very sharp contrast between the two experiences. And what is most frightening that probably will get people staying up at night, and I hate to say they might even have some kind of haunting in the home as a result of reading this, there was a lot of very disquieting elements to Shailene's experiences. I was not expecting it. As I was writing, I began to see that the types of things she was encountering was probably bordering more on something that was demonic. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it was some kind of like a reptilian experience, in my estimation. And Tom, you and I come from two different camps here. I come from the supernatural camp. Tom comes from the ufology camp. And when I put these two together, I just thought to myself, my gosh, we're going to have a clash here between ufologists and paranormal investigators.
Right. No, right. That's why I was asking that question right off the beginning of paranormal evolving into or having some kind of a clash, or how do you know which is which or anything like that. So I find that's very fascinating, and especially the angle that you took on this, which is really good. Explain this person that you just brought up, Anna. Is she one of the main characters in this book, in addition to Tom?
Okay, so I look at this book as a biography of both Tom and Shailene.
Okay.
Shailene had studied, had become one of Tom's subjects that he had studied. He made contact with her early on, and then he formulated a series of questionnaires that he sent out to, I believe, over, 500 people. Out of all those, Shailene's information happened to be the briefest one. But when he finally contacted and pursued these five people, who ultimately rang to him as having genuine experience, Shailene's was the most, I would say, intense, probably the darkest. And so it really created quite a negative aura on what was happening to him. Tom was affected, and Tom, you can pick up where you feel you need to add. Tom's life was affected by a number of these experiencers, not necessarily in a positive way. Shailene's was someone that was very absorbing and also very disturbing in terms of the content she was sharing with him. We were too far. He was too far from her. At some point, he wanted to reach out and wanted to share some ways that he could help. I myself, while interviewing her, shared with her how, I knew some organizations who could help her. Mm-hmm. So, Tom, if you want to pick up on that.
Okay. Yeah. Shailene was a very, very interesting person. What she did is she would tell me either via phone or instant message what was happening to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then contrast that with what she told Anna, and it was about 40 to 50% of what was happening to her. So even though you read Anna's account and it's terrifying, what I heard was over the top nuts, and it really affected me very badly.
Can you share a few things that that had happened that can give us all kind of an idea as to where we would say, that seems a little bit out there? Can you share a little bit of that? Or give an illustration?
Okay. She has ongoing meetings with someone at night.
Okay.
And she's taken like almost multiple times a week.
Okay.
And she comes back from these meetings with bruises in the middle of her back, something that she couldn't self-inflict.
Okay.
Bruises on her face on the backs of her arms. And they certainly are doing something to her. There's also something that she shared with me very recently that didn't make it into the book, is that someone scratched, maybe scratch isn't the right word, gouged into her back an icon, and she wondered what the icon meant. Well, I had never seen the icon before, and I reached out to one in particular of my friends who's a who's a psychic and a medium, and she told me that she connected with Shailene's spirit, and that icon was a number four.
Okay.
And that number four related to her age in the training program that they're putting her through. This training program is as a psychic warrior. I can't say any more than that.
All right, psychic warrior. I've heard that before. Interesting. And this is still all this stuff sounds to me like it's still happening to her.
Every day.
With you having an association with this individual, and I have found that even in my own life and with my husband as an example, the more involved I get with whatever wants to involve itself with me, the more it somehow bleeds over to my husband, as an example. The more association you have with this woman and her life and what has been going on, has any of that bled over to you in any way?
You might say that. I had some real issues with what she was telling me. And then coincidentally, around the same time as I was having all kinds of nightly events, they never happened nightly. It was more like monthly. And I would be having these strange events, and I was always in a state of upheaval. I also had a heart attack.
Oh.
Was that stress? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Tom.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tell her about the bruises around your eye.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The bruises around your eye?
Yeah, I woke up one morning and my left eye, there was a, about 50% of it was black. Not the inside of the eye, around the outside. From the exact center of the eye out to the outer edge, it was just all black.
So did it hurt?
When I pushed on it, it hurt a little bit, but it really wasn't bad.
How long ago did this happen?
3 months.
So it's pretty recent.
Yeah, this was after the book was written.
After the book was written.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Anna, what's your take on all of this? Anna,
Was pretty profound, because what was happening was, as I was halfway writing the book and I got to the point where she started sending me pictures of herself with bruises, I started having my own encounters at night. I actually had to stop writing the book for about a week to reconfigure whether this was really something good and safe for any of us to be writing. One night I actually was sleeping, my husband was sleeping next to me, and we have carpeting all over the bedroom floor, but I distinctly became paralyzed, could not move. And then the next thing I knew, there was a presence in the room at the very end of the room. By the foot of my bed, someone was dragging chains, and I distinctly heard chains being pulled. It was coming towards me. Whether it was, I could not open my eyes. I started reaching for the light. I also have a crucifix because the nature of my genre is such that they are watching. And this is the fifth book that I've been scribing of nature. So I have a Bible and a rosary. I could not reach for it. And then I started praying in my head. As it got close to the point where it was looking at me, I was able to reach for the crucifix. I grasped it, I started praying, and then I was able to read the light and turn it on. And of course, there was nothing there. I was terrified. And all this time, my husband slept through it. I finally reached out to an exorcist.
They always do.
Yeah, I talked to an exorcist about protection prayers. He shared some with me. The gentleman is affiliated with the Warren Legacy Foundation. He actually is, you know, an exorcist in training. He shared with me how these things can sometimes come about because that person, you know, they have an infestation that's very active, and anyone who tries to reach out and help them becomes affected. The other piece of this is the next day I ran to a church. I actually attended Mass. I came back. I got some sage. I got some candles. I lit them. I prayed again. I got to the point where I had to stop for a whole week to question whether it was safe. I asked for an answer, and by the end of the week, I felt better that I could safely continue to write it, and so we continued the book.
Interesting. You know, I've heard of this before in some way, but the question or the overriding question people might be asking right now is, what do you think it is that is attempting to either stop you or make your lives miserable? I mean, you mentioned before, one of you did, something about a reptilian. From what I understand, I don't believe there's any nice reptilians out there. Who do you think or what do you think is trying to either stop you from, now that the book is written and published, I don't know if they can even stop you anymore, but what do you think was trying to affect either of you?
Tom, do you want to take that first? I mean, I have my own interpretation, and okay. I can tell you from a description that she gave me of something she encountered in the barn, and I'm not trying to give away all of the book,
yeah,
but there's a scene where her husband was driving down the road. They were on their way to visit her parents, and it was dusk. They were actually living at a trailer at that time, and there was an infestation in the trailer. I mean, it followed her wherever she went. She was looking past him as a field was coming into view. The place was starting to get remote. It was getting darker. And out of the corner of her eye, she spotted something intently looking at her with evil. Mm-hmm. She looked past his head. He was driving, and right next to a barn, there was a creature that was wearing what appeared to be an ammo belt, and it had the head of something that appeared to be like a reptilian, but then, you know, with the scales and everything, but it had arms that were hanging low, and at the end of them, there were lobster claws, which I thought was very unusual.
Yep.
When she gave me that visual, I was scared. I was really terrified of what we were looking at. And yep. I think that had something to do with all this.
Yep. Anna, are you able to reveal the state, not necessarily anything more than that, where this encounter was occurring? And again, I want to premise something here for everybody, that just because things happen in a particular area or state doesn't necessarily mean it happens there all the time. This stuff happens everywhere. I've had my own occurrences with something I cannot explain, except in my case, things haven't been overly negative. They've been actually more of a healing type of situation with me. I haven't had the negative, and I don't ever want to have that. But are you able to reveal, or at least the whether it was like the middle of the United States or East or West Coast, for what is going on with this person?
All I can reveal is that it is on the East Coast. For the purposes of this book, I made it a small town on the very corner of Connecticut on the Massachusetts border. It was one of those places that seemed to be pretty much on par with the size of the town that this woman is currently living in. It is similarly remote. And it is not a place you would think a haunting of this intensity would occur or an encounter. But I've noticed through the years with cases that, you know, the remoteness seems to be one of the things that is key. When I looked geographically at the actual region where she was, I was also looking for a body of water. That seems to be something that's common. I didn't see any in that one. But suffice it to say, this is something that was a lifetime occurrence for her and still goes on.
Yeah. Tom, interesting. Tom, why don't you explain to people a little bit about, you studied or you have databases regarding being a forensic pattern researcher. What are your thoughts about all of this? And can you explain to people a little bit about what that is and what you do?
Okay, well, first of all, what a forensic pattern researcher is I try to take apart lots of different data points and look at them as one great big thing, and see if there's recurrent symbols within them, whether there would be in the UFO realm, whether there'd be collections of sightings in a particular place, or types of sightings, or whatever else there may have been collections of. But I try to look at things in a large, big picture manner.
Yeah.
So what I've done with the databases is the database is a National UFO Reporting Center, and they have probably 100,000 UFO sightings since the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And they have all kinds of them. Some of them are bogus. You can tell just by reading the description. Some of them are really good. And I included some of those really good ones in my first three books as examples from that particular area. And tried to demonstrate that even though they aren't being seen by a policeman, an attorney, a military man, they could still be valid. And some of these things were pretty darned interesting. So then I assembled a map with sightings on it, a map of first, I started out with New York State, and that's where I live. And within New York State, there were bunches of sightings in certain areas. And I saw collections of sightings around the water, either from the south or up in the northwest where the Great Lakes happened to be. And I was wondering if the same kind of patterns appeared elsewhere. So eventually I ended up biting the bullet, getting a great big map, gluing it to some soft board, and putting the thing up and started putting pins in the map. Mm-hmm. A year later, I have pins all over this map, in varying colors of different kinds of things seen. And from that, I was able to realize about 15 different patterns across the United States. And in certain areas, collections of UFO sightings in other areas that I never would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and that's what got me so very interested in continuing this map, because one of the very first things I did is the first state that I did was Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that because I skipped over the entire Eastern U.S. saying, I don't want to do this. I really don't want to do this. But one of my dreams at night, well, they told me I should be doing a map. It'll show me all I need to know. So I started putting this map together when I was writing my second book about the central U.S. UFO sightings. And I started out with Ohio. Lo and behold, there's a great big collection around, Ohio would be Lake Erie, right, and then Michigan up near Lake Huron, and Michigan, and the top end up in the Lake Superior.
Right.
So, these sightings started to tell me something, and I started getting really interested. Well, I was also curious what was going to happen in the middle of the states.
Right.
Am I going to find sightings or no sightings? Well, I found sightings, but a lot of the times I found different things seen in the sky and not the same kind of things seen around the water, which was also unto itself very interesting. And then there were areas all around the place that also had some really unusual collections of sightings, like Western North Carolina. There's not a whole lot there. There's a couple of small towns. One town that's probably a small to mid-sized town. And the rest of the area is just mountainous.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's a ton of sightings there. Mm-hmm. Well, it didn't make sense, you know? Why are they there and not, let's say, in central Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm.
It just made no sense to me. So those are the things that kept me going, looking into all of the things that this map was supposed to be telling me eventually, at least so I was told at night.
Did you, in the process of meeting this woman or writing about this woman, did you have already in hand or started to create a pattern, I guess is where I'm going with this, of what might be going on in her area, or if things have gone on there before and things are just, what do I want to say, awakening to a, you know, people always ask, why me? Why are they picking me? Why am I the target in this area? Did any of those answers or thoughts ever come to you in kind of doing an investigation of what might be happening, of where she's living, et cetera, et cetera? Either one of you take that question.
Okay. Let me take that first. I tried, like mad, getting a lot of data points in that regard, and I could only come up with, well, less than 50 data points. That's not enough to say there's a pattern anywhere.
Right.
During my interviews, one thing I noticed is that to a person, everyone who's claimed to have been abducted swears that one of two things happened to them. They either were previously psychic, or number two, suddenly realized that they were psychic. One or the other, and it was true with everybody that I talked to.
Interesting. Anna, your thoughts?
Well, I would have to say, from the angle of someone who's had a lot of supernatural encounters and have studied a lot of supernatural events and the meanings behind them, mm-hmm. what really pressed me with Shailene's accounts is the intensity, not just of the events, but also how often they were happening. They, to me, were markedly an infestation aimed at somehow dividing her family, isolating her, number two, creating strife and tragedy, within the family. She also disclosed to me during my interviews that a lot of places, including her haunted. The last home she lives in, which is currently there was a tragedy where the gentleman who used to live there committed suicide right on the front step of the house. And she would see hooded monk figures walking in silence in a line outside at night. They wouldn't really be saying anything that she could figure out. Chanting, which bothered me. Mm-hmm. Chanting is usually associated with things that are not holy. I didn't really know what to make of why all these homes that she's been to have been privy to these types of malevolent right. type of beings. One has caused her husband to alienate her, actually attack her, try to strangle her to death. There was a lot of events involving the parents themselves, even when she was young, that caused her to feel alienated and somehow excluded. So it continues on, and it just keeps happening, and it just becomes more and more. I mean, Tom, I'm out of the loop now. You're keeping in touch with her, but just the things you're telling me tells me that it's becoming more and more severe.
It's pretty rough.
It's so she's still, and I know you mentioned, one of you mentioned this during the interview here, she has reached out to someone who is a proclaimed expert exorcist type individual to try to see if that could calm it down or stop it. Is this unstoppable? I guess that's my question.
I reached out because I was very troubled for her. Yeah. I also was very concerned how widespread this was going to be. And if you just look at common mainstream, anyone who wants to be involved ends up getting hurt or getting killed, actually. I was afraid that it was going to magnify to that point. When Tom told me that he had a bruise in his eye, which he couldn't explain, I began to worry about the safety of my own family here where I am. So I now do a lot of prayers of protection before I write, and the current one that I'm writing, I'm doing the same thing. I offered at the close of this book to Shailene, and I told her it is still open, that I know a couple of organizations who would be willing to intervene to make referrals to the appropriate people who can try and remove whatever is happening to her from her midst. And I don't recall a concrete answer other than it's a lifetime thing, which I ended up with the closure to the book.
So now that you guys have published the book, because it's out on Amazon, my question, or maybe many of us are wondering, because I know what happened with you while you were writing the book, and Tom, of course, things that were happening to you as this book was being written, and everything, even including recent stuff. Has it calmed down at all? Is it getting worse? Do you know yet what the overall effect might be? What are your observations regarding now that the book has been published?
Well, for me, I have noticed no difference. Nothing. It continues on every month or so that something really unusual happens, and maybe 3 or 4 days out of the month, I will have a rather large download go on, mm-hmm. and it'll probably force me awake at about 3 a.m. And but I have not noticed a let up in anything. If anything, I've noticed an uptick in activity, because I gather that they want me to do something else.
Something else like what?
I try to keep doing things to see if they respond to it. But I've gathered that they want me to write another book.
Okay.
About God.
About God.
Okay. Yeah. And believe me, I am the last person in the United States that should write a book about God. But I get the impression that they've given me enough downloads that I can continue on with it.
Mm-hmm. This book about God, to believe in God or to not believe in God?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's to expand the nature, the reality of what God is. In other words, when you're taught in school, Catholic school, you get, pounded with God is everywhere. He's looking over your shoulder and whatever else. And I get from the dreams at night that they're trying to tell me that God is infinite. And that's what I should be talking about.
Okay, interesting. And you could be the second person, by the way, that I know that gets incredible downloads. Do you get them to the point where, like, even if you wake up at 3 a.m. or whatever, you just are very compelled to just sit down and start writing out everything that's coming to you? Is it that intense? Or do you just kind of, at coffee or breakfast, go, well, that was an interesting one last night. I think I'm going to sit down and start writing some of this stuff.
Actually, no. I don't recall anything I'm being told other than what they might tell me in a dream.
Okay.
Not the download. Mm-hmm. And in the dream, it would be short and sweet and specific and tell me something that I should remember or do from now on.
Right. I've heard of that before. Anna, since this stuff has happened to you also recently, what kinds of things have affected you primarily? I mean, do you feel like you have to sit down and write all of a sudden additional thoughts to, or do you have a particular insight that is like something that maybe you never thought of before that brings you to another higher level of thinking? What's happening with you?
I think that on a positive note, I have to say that when Tom started telling me the nature of these entities that were with him, what I did first was I consulted a medium whom I trusted, and she concurred with me that the feeling I had was that they were very much watching after Tom. Instead of actually trying to do something negative to him, they were actually his custodians, his guardians. These are people that lived in that area way, way before, we settled on U.S. soil. These are people that have been here for generations and generations and know well the powers of nature and God. So what they're in effect doing is making sure that he is able to digest the information he is getting and that he is protected. So that was really a very, very positive, very warm feeling that I got in writing the narrative of Tom. And that's still what I continue to see. I see Tom, of course, writing more books in this vein. And now you validated it, Tom. But I also see on the other end someone who is helpless and continues to be helpless. And that's Shailene. I think at this point, her life has been replete with all kinds of negative things going on. And I have to accept at some point that there's nothing that we can do about her situation until she moves forward and says to us, I am willing to be helped. So those are the two valuable things I've learned.
Interesting that you would... I'm kind of surprised that she could actually be, I don't want to use the word controlled, but sometimes even if people want help, their minds or things that happen around them become so chaotic that they don't get to that point where they can actually get that help. I'm presuming this. She doesn't like living in the manner of which things are happening, and if she even got up and moved to another location. Why do I have this sense or feeling that whatever's happening to her would follow her there too? What are your thoughts about that?
Directly. That's exactly what would happen. She's moved several times, and each time that she moved, they were there front and center.
Yeah. And what I'm trying to figure out, what their ultimate result is of her. Are they trying to, I hate to be so blunt, but are they trying to kill her and take her soul? Or what exactly do they need of her, this woman?
Psychic warfare. She is a protector and a warrior.
Interesting.
Anna? Even though she's like my age.
Yeah.
And believe me, I'm not warrioring with anybody right now. And she isn't either. But psychically, I think that may be a whole different story.
Interesting. Can you explain, just for those that are hearing this for the first time, and I know there's going to be a lot of newbies listening to this program, what would you consider to be or how to describe psychic warfare or warrior?
I heard this the first time when she told me, and I still have no clue what it is, but she tells me that's what she's doing. When she goes either off world or out of her body or whatever the deal happens to be.
I think that what bothers me the most is that Shailene has bought into this and is learning to live with it. And what has resulted is that their children, her children, are also now affected by it. One of her grandchildren, she told me, had actually seen the creature that she had seen. The child was hysterical, running from the room when she saw a commercial on TV with a giant ant. It was, I think, for some kind of insect repellent, something, which told her the child had seen it. When they see it, what happens to them, I don't know. I'm no longer privy to that. One of the things about getting permission is that you're shared whatever they want to share to the ability that they can. And some remain, of course, as with anything else, private. But what was shared with me was truly singular and terrifying. And that's why I named it unexplainable, because to me, it's still a phenomenon that has two sides of the coin and continues to consume her.
Yeah, it's interesting and fascinating. As we go into our wrap-up, before we go into the wrap-up, I want each of you to try to give us a takeaway. Again, tell us the name of the book. Tell us some of the takeaways you are hoping the reader will get in purchasing this book. And let's start with that.
Okay, I can go first. The book is called The Night Visitants, A Ufologist, An Experiencer, and The Undefinable. What I'm hoping people understand is that there is truly an unseen force out there. And there are two kinds. There are two kinds that are constantly battling in the universe, the negative and the positive force. And in this book, you will see both. In the embodiment of spirits that are visiting on Tom, and in the embodiment of a very strong dark force visiting on Shailene. I want people to know this happens to just regular people. You don't have to be special in any way at all. I wrote it in such a way that people could actually read it for entertainment if that's what they all choose to take from it. But it is not data driven by any chance. All the data comes direct from both people, Tom and Shailene. And I put it in a way that could be easily digested and easily understood visually, because I'm a cinematic storyteller, and that's who I am.
Mm-hmm. Tom, what are your takeaways here on that book?
I really hoped that people who have the kind of experiences that I am having right now, and there are probably thousands around the world, that these people will say, you know, I had something similar. that might be me. I'm wondering what's going on. Maybe I should contact this guy and try to find out what else he knows. That's what I'm hoping.
Tell our readers and our listeners and our viewers, because I'm expecting people to purchase your book, where they can find it, what kind of websites you guys have, how they can contact you. We'll start with that. Anna, let's go first.
Okay, the book is on Amazon. All they have to do is type the title, The Night Visitants, and it'll pop up. All my other works are there, but I also have a website that goes direct to Amazon. It's under my name, AnnaMariaManaloAuthor.com. I can be found on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram.
And did you have, do you want them to reach out to you by Messenger if on Facebook? Is that an acceptable way here?
Yeah, they can reach out to me two ways, either by private messaging or they can email me any stories they want. And actually, I'm compiling another anthology. That's Cineschriber, C-I-N-E, Scriber, S-R-I-B-E-R, at gmail.com.
Okay, and I'll make sure I get that in the show notes. Tom, how can they reach out to you if they either have stories to share, questions, or maybe they want to comment?
Okay, well, I am available on Facebook. That's where I do most of my posting. So a lot of the things that happen to me at night are direct orders for me to go post something on Facebook the next day and get people talking. So at Facebook, tom.conwell.3, you can look me up. I will respond to instant message. You can try to get me through email, tconwell2 at nycap.rr.com.
On behalf of the show, thank you so much for being with us today.